When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's in the bullpen. This game.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam! I'm telling you, it's time to party!
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by my co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster for episode 254 of the show. Keaton, welcome back. We've got a very positive show today.
Yeah. Been a while since we had one of those back-to-back AL East series wins, baby.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, the back-to-back series wins thing. So that one-off against the Orioles was technically considered a series. But, you know, at this point, with how rare these series wins have been, I think we'll take it, right?
Yeah, you have no idea how long Bailey and I, while we were getting ready for the series preview of that, scoured the schedule to find what series that was a makeup game for. We spent so long trying to dig that up until we finally just were like, nope, this is just a one game, not a makeup. It's a schedule.
Do we know why that was the case?
I'm assuming because of the late start.
Yeah.
I don't know why else that would be there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll take it. But the real big news here is the, you know, taking 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. Just an unbelievable series for the Red Sox. So we're going to get into that today. We're going to talk about the health of the team, which is trending upwards. Talk about some roster moves and, you know, some other fun stuff on this show. But let's get right to it. Red Sox just took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. There's 46 games remaining in the season. As we are recording this on a Monday night when the Red Sox are off, you know, a little bit about the standings right now. Red Sox are currently 15 and a half games back of the Yankees. They're 57 and 59 with a negative 32 run differential. But it's not all bad right now. There's definitely some positive news in terms of the wild card standings. Red Sox are just 4.5 games back of the third wild card spot. Chicago White Sox are ahead of them 2 games back. The Minnesota Twins are also 2 games back. And the Baltimore Orioles, who they play this week, are 1.5 games back of that third spot. Tampa has the third spot right now. Seattle has the second spot. And Toronto has the first spot. So Red Sox still kind of, you know, They're if this was a distance race, they'd sort of be hanging on to the back of the pack. But they're still there. So, I mean, let's talk about this Yankees series a little bit, Keaton. What takeaways did you have from it? Because there were a lot of really good things I think we could take from it. But what were kind of the biggest things that you noticed about the series win?
Pitching seems to be getting itself back on track, which is huge for this team. I mean, even in the game that they lost, there wasn't a whole lot to really nitpick about it. That was the Carter Crawford game. They only allowed like 2 hits. They got beat on Isaiah Kiner Falefa's first homer of the season, basically. It was a 2-run shot. And then the bullpen came in after and did a pretty good job. All 3 of those games, the starters and the relievers looked really strong. So the starters and the relievers, I think as the starters are getting healthy and we're going to talk about kind of how the bullpen is getting shaped as people are returning and getting healthy, but it's helping shore up the bullpen as well. And it's kind of getting both sides of the pitching stronger, and it's kind of helping with this momentum. And now you've got a couple really good series to take advantage of with this momentum and kind of keep the wins rolling. They do have some tough series against the AL East remaining, but they've got some real nice softies mixed in here down the stretch as well. So if they can keep this momentum going, they can, you know, we don't know, trying to get too hopeful here, but they can do some damage here. They can hang around. They can sneak in here. They can be a little dangerous.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the pitching, you know, was huge. I think all 3 of the starters, you know, performed really, really well. Obviously, Waka had the best start, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to talk about Garrett Whitlock first because, you know, last time we were on here podcasting, we were talking about his usage and how frustrating that had been. But here, I mean, Garrett Whitlock played the key role, pitching 2 innings in the extra innings win, the first game, 3-2 victory, you know, came out and really just shut down the Yankees, the heart of the Yankees lineup for 2 innings there, struck out 3 guys, looked incredible, just overpowering stuff, really was the biggest reason why I think the Red Sox were able to pull off that victory, although Tommy Pham was great too, and his quote about, you know, not getting paid overtime was pretty fantastic. But then, you know, he comes back in the Waka game as well and gets the save there, pitches a clean inning. You know, it's been really nice to see him being used a little bit more in the way that you have been talking about wanting him to be used. So you want to talk about that a little bit and what that does for the bullpen?
Yeah, I love that. Really, since he came back off of the IL in July, beginning of July, his usage had been, he pitches 2 innings, he gets 2 days off, pitches 3 innings, gets 3 days off. So you mentioned in Friday night, he pitched 2 innings in that extra inning game, which if they had stuck to that usage pattern, meant he was done for the series. He wasn't going to pitch again against the Yankees. But it came Sunday night on the heels of Waka's awesome performance, needing to lock down a save and a win and series win. Turn to your best pitcher, which is what I've been really kind of wanting to see, is when you need to lock down a win, turn to your best pitchers to get those wins. So I was ecstatic to see that that was the case. And I assume that not having, officially now, not having how to turn to was a big part of that. It will be interesting to see, though, because not having Houck available, Schreiber and Whitlock have been used a lot in 2-inning spurts here. I really want to avoid having another situation where we have, you know, the overusage problem with these guys in the bullpen. I feel like that's not going to happen with Whitlock, but because they had been pretty, you know, giving him those extra days off after his outings. So I'm hoping that's not going to be the case, but I really hope that Hauk ends up not being out for an extended period of time, because relying on those guys too much down the stretch, we've just seen it year over year with guys getting just exhausted in this bullpen at the end of the year, and they really need to win these games. So I hope that Hauk is able to return soon.
Yeah, and I think we've seen an encouraging usage pattern by Alex Cora recently with how he's been relying on Ryan Brazier and Hirokazu Sawamura a little bit more in these situations. And, you know, I've actually been impressed with both of those guys, particularly Ryan Brazier's velocity has been pretty impressive recently. It's been in the upper 90s, and he's been locating pretty well. And I think the breaking ball for him has been quite a bit better than it's been in the past. And I think that Sawamura is a guy who is finally starting to earn some trust from Alex Cora as well. That splitter that he has been downright filthy recently. And, you know, he's gotten out of some big jams. So he's actually... you know, he's earning my trust a little bit more, and it seems like Cora is actually looking at him and deciding to turn to him in particular situations. It seems like Austin Davis and Matt Barnes are the guys that he's still kind of shying away from in those situations. But, you know, nice to have a couple other arms that you can be a little bit more confident about.
Yeah. I'm coming around to Brazier as well. Which is a bit of a turn, but it's hard to argue with the results.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, the nice thing about Brazier is the fact that he doesn't really walk anybody, which is the thing that, you know, so many guys in this pen have an issue with. You look at Davis and Sawamura over the season, and they both have 20 plus walks, and Ryan Brazier's got 44 strikeouts to just 9 walks. So, you know, the ERA is still not pretty, but definitely pitching better than his ERA recently. So we'll see how that shapes up coming up here in the future. Okay, a couple other takeaways from this series. Rafael Devers, I think we have to talk about him and his performance in the third game of the series, which, you know, was definitely the most dominant game for the Red Sox. The game was over and 2 hours and 15 minutes, which is practically a miracle when you're talking about a Red Sox-Yankees game. And he made a spectacular defensive play at third base. I believe it was Kyle Higashioka whose hit he took away down the line. And then he also had a huge home run, which kind of broke him out of a little bit of a slump. He was really struggling in August. So, you know, encouraging to see Devers getting it together, and also a bounce back game from Bogarts, who struggled in the second game of that series. Do you have any thoughts on either of those guys and, you know, the performance from either the struggles from Bogarts in game two or his bounce back and Devers kind of busting out of that slump?
Yeah, Devers was really impressive. I mean, that not only was that a great defensive play, but that saved at least one run down in the corner, possibly two, which obviously it would have either tied the game or given the Yankees the lead at that point. And then the dinger was just like a fastball high and tight. Looked like he got jammed, and then it just kept going and going and going, and then ended up like 8 rows deep over the bullpen. It was a shot. That was not where I was expecting that one to land immediately when it went off the bat, and it just kept going. Was just really impressive homer. That it's just, he's such a talented baseball player. And then the steps that he's made defensively this year have just been crazy impressive. Like that's one of those ones where really even kind of like last year he'd be rushing his footwork and then probably ends up throwing it away or just sailing it. But he's really worked at getting his footwork down, and when he's in a hurry, to make sure that he gets the throw on target and in time. And it wasn't close. He beat him by a couple steps to make that play. It was just all around the improvement this year from his defense. It's incredible. That was an awesome game from him.
Yeah, he hasn't made an error since July 3rd, which is a pretty incredible stretch for him. And, you know, talking about it, we've mentioned it for years that it always seems like a lot of the stuff that he does is sort of avoidable and you know, comes down to being kind of mental errors here for Devers. And he's really cleaning a lot of that stuff up. So that's just fantastic to see. You know, I'm very encouraged by it. Xander, on the flip side, though, you know, we give Xander a lot of credit on this show. We also have to kind of tell it how it is. He had a pretty disappointing end to game two, where he had that very weak infield pop-up to kind of end the game with the game on the line there. And then he didn't want to talk to the media and kind of just bounced out of there after that. It seems like this season's just kind of getting to him mentally.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering kind of if there's anything in particular there that's bothering him. I know he was supposedly one of those guys that was going to have a sit down with Chaim Bloom after the trade deadline. But I wonder if just, you know, kind of the contract and the emotions and all that stuff are kind of weighing on him a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems like it does. It seems like the more that they stumbled and the further they got away from contending for a playoff, the more he was kind of accepting it all being over.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this momentum and maybe getting, you know, stringing a few wins along kind of gets that spark back and seeing that, you know, the season's not over yet. They still got a chance. It may still seem like a long shot because there is still a bunch of teams ahead of them for the playoff spot. And he was one of the ones that was more vocal about wanting more help at the trade deadline than they got, and was seemed like he was as disappointed as the fans were with the confusion and kind of lack of direction at the trade deadline. But, you know, the team is what it is. So if you want to make a run for the playoffs, then this is it. You know, this, you got what you got. You got to push forward with it. Whether you think that can, you know, this is your last run with the Red Sox or not, you kind of got to work with it. But it just kind of feels like, not that he's, I don't think that he's given up, obviously, with the season that he's having. He's, like you pointed out on the last podcast, he's like almost about to have the best career season that he's ever had. But as far as like, he might see the writing on the wall that this is the end with the Red Sox, it kind of feels like he's showing that a bit.
Yeah, I hope that this is just him having a very human moment right now. And hopefully, you know, taking 2 out of 3 from the Yankees sort of jump starts things here. And as they start to get those familiar faces back in the dugout, you know, we're getting a couple guys back this week as well against Pittsburgh. Hopefully Bogaerts kind of finishes strong here with the Red Sox, if it is indeed the finish. You know, and he's still playing for a contract too. So hopefully, that all goes away. I think he's a very professional guy, so I don't expect that, you know, that sort of stuff will continue, but it was a little disappointing to see. But you know, another guy who we've been talking about a lot on this show is Alex Verdugo. I tweeted out that Alex Verdugo has been just incredibly hot recently. And if we look back at the last, 6 games, the 2 versus Atlanta, the 1 against Baltimore, and the 3 against the Yankees. Over that time period, he's slashing .421, .542, .684 slugging percentage with a .245 WRC plus. Really just doing a lot of damage. Not slugging the crap out of the ball. No home runs in that stretch, but you know, 4 runs and an RBI. He seems to be a lot more comfortable at the plate. What kind of things have you seen from Alex Verdugo over this stretch that, you know, you can kind of start hoping for a little bit more on? Or, you know, what are you noticing with him?
Yeah, it just seems like things are just kind of evening out for him. Like, even when he was struggling, he was still hitting the crap out of the ball and just had some really awful BABIP luck. And it just kind of seems like it's just kind of, you know, averaging out for him now. He never stopped being confident in his abilities through that slump. And just kind of continued to push through it and just work through, you know, whatever he was doing at the plate, just kind of kept that going. And it just seems like now it's just starting to kind of turn and pay off for him. And I think even if you kind of extend that longer, that we could see that stuff starting to turn really kind of since the All-Star break, him kind of starting to turn around. It's not as abruptly as the numbers that you just pointed out, but some of that bad luck was starting to turn and things were, you know, coming a lot better. He's got his average up to 275 for the season now, and it was down there at like 255, 250, I believe, for quite a while. So really since like the All-Star break second half, he's been crushing it. And that's mainly because he's just kept all of that, all the batted ball stuff that he had crushed through the first like third of the season going. A lot of it was just kind of bad luck. I'm just waiting for it to turn around, and now it has. And I think some of that power stuff is going to follow. So,
yeah, I mean, if you go all the way back to the last game of the prior Yankees series in July 17th, all the way to now, which is, you know, nearly a month's worth of baseball games, he's batting 326, 376, 477 with a 141 WRC plus. He's been really, really good over the last month or so of baseball. So, yeah, I think that this is hopefully what we're going to see from Verdugo for the remainder of the season. And it adds a lot of length to the lineup if you're getting that. I mean, Tommy Pham's been a revelation here with the Red Sox. He's been an incredible fit for the lineup, giving it some length. If you can get that out of Verdugo, you've got Hosmer there giving you professional at-bats as well. This lineup feels a lot deeper to me.
Yeah, I just pulled up his splits because I was curious from the All-Star break, his like official second half, and 329 average. So that's pretty close to what that same date that you just pulled, which is about 70 points higher than his batting average from the first half. So yeah, he's been on a tear since the All-Star break.
Yeah, really good to see from him. On the pitching side, though, Michael Wacha, we've been kind of dancing around this, probably the biggest story. His return from the IL, just came back and was flat out dominant versus the Yankees. Seven innings pitch, just allowed two hits, one walk, struck out nine, which was just really impressive from him. 89 pitch effort. He's still got a 2.44 ERA on the season. And I know, you know, we've talked about how his expected numbers are not quite as good as what we're seeing on the surface. But, you know, I was digging into the data a little bit with Michael Wacha, and I was looking in at his heat maps for the last couple of seasons where, you know, in 2021, he was really bad. And in 2022, he's been really good. And I noticed that with his four-seam fastball this year, he's been throwing that pitch much higher in the zone with more frequency. So he's elevating the four-seam fastball to get some more whiffs off of that. His changeup's always been an elite pitch for him. He's doing a better job of sort of locating that around the zone. And then with his cutter, which has been, you know, arguably his cutter slash sinker have been kind of his best pitches after the changeup. He's really been throwing those pitches sort of down and in to righties and down and away to lefties. Hopefully I said that correctly. But yeah, I mean, he's throwing essentially the same pitches, but he's just locating them better this season. So I don't know whether that's a credit to the Red Sox pitching, you know, program over here and Matt Bush, but or Dave Bush, I should say. Matt Bush is a pitcher. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, what have you seen from Wacha? He's kind of been your guy all year.
Yeah. And I was actually kind of worried about his return because I thought, you know, this injury might derail all of the awesome progress that he had made in the first half. But obviously, like his last rehab start with the Woo Sox there was a combined no-hitter, obviously, which he started. And then Also had that going for, what was it, like four or five innings here against the Yankees, and this start had a no-hitter going for a while. So that has just a really impressive return, and feels like he didn't really miss a beat and can keep that going again and be kind of that anchor for this rotation. You really kind of hope that Evaldi gets velocity back, and that can be that your 1-2 tandem there at the top of the rotation. But that's, I mean, this was crazy impressive. Just not only like in prime time against the Yankees, but like first start coming back off of the IL, going for the series win, like all of the struggles against the AL East and the Yankees, well documented. There is just a lot of pressure on this start, and for this to be the first start coming back off of the IL and then to just crush it in 2 hours like that was crazy impressive.
Yeah, it really was, and especially how he dealt with the heart of the Yankees lineup as well. It was just, it was great to see. You know, Waka's really worked out here, and been much better than I expected. The changeup's always been the best pitch for him, but it's nice to see some of the other stuff working. And the changeup really has been sort of vintage. It's been as effective as the best seasons that he had early in his career with the Cardinals. So, you know, big credit to the Red Sox and to Michael Wacha for getting their heads together and figuring this out. And I think that, you know, he's somebody that I'm a little bit more interested in bringing him back for next year, especially considering how good of a fit this has been. Do you think there's any chance in a reunion for Wacha and the Red Sox for next year?
A chance? Yeah. I feel like a small chance based off of these results.
Yeah. You think he's going to go out and get the bag from somebody?
Yeah.
Probably so. But, you know, we can be hopeful. Maybe it'll come. He'll come back. Speaking of coming back, though, a couple guys are being activated to the lineup here. Kike Hernandez and Rob Refsnyder are both likely to be activated today as you are listening to this on a Tuesday against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Kike is definitely going to be activated. It seems like Refsnyder is ready as well. Both of those guys were just rehabbing in Portland, and actually had some pretty good rehab stints there. So one move has already been announced. Jalen Davis has been optioned, and he's going down. So, I mean, who do you think the other move is? In my mind, I'm kind of thinking Jaron Duran, but do you think it's going to be somebody else, or is it definitely going to be the outfielder, Jaron Duran?
Well, I don't know. The more I think about it, I think Duran stays as somebody on the bench. I think if Cora wants to, which I think he should, manage these last 45 games like playoff games, having someone available to pinch run with Duran's speed probably be really helpful. I know obviously the defense isn't spectacular, but so who would I guess Refsnyder would be the fourth outfielder?
Yeah, Refsnyder would be the fourth outfielder with Kike back in the mix. So, you know, that really puts into question, like, you're obviously going to play Kike every day when he comes back, you know. Yeah. Jaron Duran isn't displacing Pham or Verdugo. So, you know, do you want to get him reps at AAA at this point? Because
it's, you know, probably that, Yomer Sanchez.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Yomer Sanchez, though, if you don't have him on the roster, you don't have a backup middle infielder.
Well, Refsnyder could play the middle infield. But the other piece to that is Trevor Story is traveling with the team.
Oh, interesting.
Which means that he's coming back either in Pittsburgh or Baltimore. So within the next six games, he's coming back.
So, I mean, at that point, if you're going to have Story and Duran back soon, probably Yolmer and Duran are going to find themselves down in AAA.
Yeah, I would think so. Unless, yeah, no, I mean, it's got to be Durant. I don't think they're going to.
I know you're desperately trying to find a way for him to stay up here.
Well, I'm just thinking,
I just don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking the speed would be nice to have, but Cora also hasn't really ever managed the Red Sox like that. Like, he hasn't really needed anybody to pinch run ever. So, like, that's not a way that he has ever managed the team. But he's also never really had anybody available to do that. But I don't know if that's necessarily something he cares about. I know he wants them to be aggressive on the base pass, but I think that's more just within themselves, not just like a philosophy of his kind of thing. So, I don't know if that's necessarily important to him, but I was, yeah. So, yeah, probably is. It's probably Sanchez and Duran.
Yeah. I will say, though, I'm going to look back favorably on the Jalen Davis time. He kind of impressed me in this little stint. So,
yeah.
You know, good little waiver claim there by Heim Bloom with Jalen Davis. Definitely filled a need.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Big news for me. I'm finally getting my wish, Keaton. Josh Winkowski has been moved to the bullpen. And I want to say that, you know, I agree with the sentiment that you and Bailey have been putting out. Josh Winkowski has been asked to do a lot. Has filled that role very well. There was some talk that Rich Hill was going to be the guy to go to the bullpen, but they decided that Rich Hill will indeed get the start on Wednesday, which I think is the right move. And Josh Winkowski, who has performed admirably, but just it's always kind of felt like he's been wiggling out of situations and sort of biting off more than he can chew. But Winkowski is moving to the pen. So I'm interested in that. He seems to be a long guy out of the pen, but I want to kind of see what he looks like there. So what do you think of the move? Right decision, or would you have put Rich Hill in the bullpen?
I would have preferred Winkowski to stay, but I don't think Rich Hill's stuff makes sense in the pen at all. Like,
yeah.
If the option is Rich Hill or Winkowski, Winkowski is the play.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think that Rich Hill's stuff makes sense there. So if it was between like Winkowski and somebody else, probably would have preferred Winkowski to stay in the rotation. But yeah, just between those two, I think that was the right move. And then you could always just piggyback Winkowski on top of Hill if you needed to. So I think you could have used them in tandem if you need to. And hopefully, you know, Hill figures his stuff back out to where he was in the first half of the season. But that kind of goes into what we were saying before with as the rotation gets healthy, that kind of strengthens what they have going on in the bullpen. And having a guy like Winkowski in the bullpen helps.
Yeah, it really does. And if you have a reliable long guy, it kind of changes what you can do with Garrett Whitlock's usage a little bit as well. So I like the idea of it, and hopefully, you know, that produces some good results. Another move that happened in the bullpen that was kind of shocking to me was a guy who we dismissed last time on the show, Jeurys Familia. He is now in the pen with the Red Sox instead of Caleb Ort. He hasn't pitched yet. But apparently, reports are that he worked on, you know, some mechanics and some mental stuff down the Dominican Republic with some people who he's very familiar with and, you know, that he trusts, and he feels like he's got his stuff back. So the Red Sox are going to give him a shot. You expecting anything out of Jerry's Familia?
Not really, but I mean, we weren't getting anything out of Wart, so why not? I mean, if he feels confident in his stuff, then sure, why not? Let's see.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, why not? And we've seen Familia be a really good major league pitcher in the past. So, yeah, I'm definitely open to giving it a try. I still kind of wonder why the Red Sox just aren't going with Bizzardo or Zach Kelly or Frank German. I don't know why those levers haven't been pulled yet. Maybe it's just because, you know, looking forward to some of these other guys getting healthy. You know, maybe they just don't want to pull the trigger on those guys. I get that more with Frank German than I do with Kelly and Bizzardo, who are in their, you know, later 20s. They're both like 26, 27 years old. So I get that a little bit less with those guys, but I don't really have any issue trying out Familia right now and seeing what you have.
Yep.
All right, so the guys who were still waiting to get healthy are Strom, Hauk, Bayo, and James Paxton. And, you know, it kind of brings up an interesting point there, talking about the bullpen, which we've been, you know, going back and forth on. If they can get those other three guys healthy, and you kind of assume that Bayo, once he's healthy, will probably pitch out of the pen for the remainder of the season, you could have a bullpen with Garrett Whitlock, Schreiber, Hauk, Strom, you know, Bayo. There's a way that you can kind of get rid of a lot of the guys who are your biggest questions. I mean, I don't know who they'd have some big decisions to make, like Austin Davis, you know, being your only lefty in the pen. I don't know what you do with him. I guess Strom would come back, so he'd be a lefty. But Matt Barnes, I wonder how much leash he has at this point. And Familia, I guess Winkowski can be optioned. But, I mean, eventually they're going to have kind of a logjam here. What do you think they do with these guys? Do you think that Bayo goes back down or goes into the pen? There's going to be a lot of moving pieces over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think Bayo probably goes back down. But with Paxton, that probably pushes Rich Hill to the pen. Mm-hmm. And you have another lefty there. So you're probably looking at like Strom and Hill as your lefties.
So Austin Davis potentially gone, you think?
Yeah.
I wouldn't shed any tears for Austin Davis. Maybe he can get some revenge, though, this week against Pittsburgh. The old Austin Davis revenge tour.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to our next stuff here. Kevin Plecky. I want to talk about the plaster. Still hasn't been able to kind of turn it around this season, offensively, defensively. He's not really throwing runners out. He's kind of just working with the pitching staff, and that's what he's been good at. He's likely gone after this season. Would you be interested in giving Connor Wong a audition down the stretch, especially as Reese McGuire gets more comfortable with the pitching staff here? Wong is a guy who's really thrown to a lot of these pitchers in the Red Sox bullpen and in the rotation. So he's got a rapport with a lot of these guys already. And he's been hot. You know, he's been batting like 300 with some pop down in AAA over the last month. So what are your thoughts on the catching situation?
Yeah, I would like to see him get a chance, just an extended run here, because we have seen him appear at the major league level in little spurts, but I'd like to see him get more of an extended look. See what you got.
Yeah, I'd like to see it too. Do you think it happens? What percentage chance would you give on Red Sox DFAing Plecky and giving Wong a chance?
I don't know. It seems like they're kind of rolling with these guys. Maybe a 25% chance.
Yeah, 25 or under, I think. I might even be a little bit more conservative and say like 10% chance. It seems like Cora really likes his guys. So kind of thinking Pulwecki's here for the rest of the season. And if he is, I don't really have a huge problem with it, considering the amount of change that the pitching staff is having to go through right now anyhow with, adjusting to life without Christian Vasquez. Tristan Casas, though, he's been hot recently in AAA. Do you think he ends up getting the call at any point this year with the Red Sox down the stretch? Or, you know, with the roster construction, does it just not really make sense? Because, you know, looking at it right now, I think you'd probably have to option Bobby Dalbec to give him a chance on this roster at this point, especially when everybody's healthy. I don't know what else you would do to have that happen.
I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
You think they'll do that?
Probably not. I'm just saying I wouldn't have a problem with it.
I wouldn't either. I'd probably be pretty happy about that. I wonder if they just do the thing where they call him up to kind of just be with the major league team and not play. And not have a roster spot, but I don't know. You kind of seen what you've seen from Bobby Dalbec at this point, right? I mean, especially considering once Story's back, you can have Arroyo play third base if you need anybody to sub in for Devers. At that point, Bobby Dalbec's roster spot seems pretty tenuous.
But then you're weighing like just him being around major leaguers versus getting consistent at-bats, and it probably makes more sense for him to just get at-bats.
Yeah, and I do wonder, especially because he's going to factor into their plans for next year, whether or not they do want to see him down the stretch. So the more I think about it, the more I think it does make sense to bring him up to the major league club at some point down the stretch. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens within the next couple weeks. Be a fun thing to see.
It would.
All right, let's talk about Cutter Crawford here as well. Cutter Crawford has been just a really impressive pitcher for the Red Sox this season. Got kind of an interesting pitch mix. Got it pulled up right here. Four-seam fastball cutter, which is his best pitch, not surprisingly. Curveball, changeup, slider. He doesn't throw a whole lot of changeups and sliders. He's really kind of a three-pitch guy with the four-seam cutter and the curveball. But he's been really impressive this year. Looking forward to next season, especially because, you know, there aren't that many guys under contract. We've talked about how Eovaldi is up. You know, no sure thing. He'll be back. Waka's up. Hill's up. Do you feel confident that being in the rotation next year is something that could happen here with the Red Sox? You know, do you think that there's a spot for him in this rotation next year?
Yeah, I think there's going to be. And I think I feel okay with that. I mean, if you're asking him to be your fifth starter, I feel comfortable with that. If you're asking him to be a lot more than that for an extended period of time, I'm not sure. But like fourth, fifth guy, I think is a really solid option for that. And as you pointed out a lot, he's also somebody whose stuff probably plays up in the bullpen as well. So if it doesn't work or you end up, for whatever reason, if they end up going on a trade/buying spree for the rotation, he's probably not a bad guy to have in the bullpen as well. Or, as you've also pointed out, probably would make a great Oakland Athletic. So there's that too. Yeah.
Maybe he's one of the big pieces that gets you Sean Murphy in the offseason. I'd be okay with that too.
Yeah.
I do kind of worry a little bit about him being in the rotation next year, just because I agree with you. I think he's more of a four or five. But I think when you look at the guys who are here and under contract, who we kind of figure to be in the rotation next year, pending any huge moves. I mean, you have Chris Sale, hopefully, finally. I know it's kind of a running joke at this point, but, you know, let's just assume you have a healthy Chris Sale. He's your number one. Your number two, probably, I don't know, is it Whitlock? Whitlock, we figure, goes back to the rotation. He's your two. Then you'd have Cutter and Pivetta. Like, who am I missing?
Bayo.
Okay, Bayo. So
I think there has to be a free agent or a trade for a starting pitcher. There has to be somebody. I really want whoever the number two is to be from outside the organization.
Well, yeah, because the problem with the rotation that I just named is that it's basically Chris Sale, who's a huge question mark.
And what they have now.
Yeah, and then what? All four guys who might be fifth starters at this point in their career? Like, we're not saying that Bayo is a fifth starter long term, but like that's what he might pitch like next year. We haven't seen Garrett Whitlock be a ton more than that when he's been in the rotation. Maybe he's a four. You know, Pivetta, he's definitely a true fifth. You know, you might be asking Cutter to be like a three, which feels aggressive.
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah, I hope that's not the case. They have to have an addition from outside that can match with Sale to be your 1-2, and then rely on Whitlock as your 3, and then Pivetta Cutter as your 4-5. That seems okay. And then you would probably eventually phase out Cutter to the bullpen with Bayo.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And for the people who are screaming at us, Paxton. Yes, Paxton could factor into this if they do indeed decide that he's healthy enough to kind of activate the rest of that contract. They just didn't want to bank on him. But he could be a really easy solution to slide into that 2 spot behind Sale if indeed he can prove he's healthy down the stretch this year.
But he's pitched 12 innings since 2019. I don't think we can rely on him being like a number two.
Yeah, that's true. He probably is better off being like a three, a high-ceiling three for your team. So you might be right, Keaton. You may still need another addition past that, even if you're, you know, taking on that contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wanted to end the show with a little discussion about the piece that I just wrote on Bloom's tenure with the Red Sox. Here at Over the Monster, the Heim Bloom deep dive. What I attempted to do with this piece, Keaton, was kind of bucket all of the players, or not all of the players, but all of the players who have had like significant impact on the major league roster since Heim Bloom has been here over the last 3+ years, into buckets about, you know, claims and Rule 5 picks that had an impact, ones that didn't, trades that worked out, ones that kind of didn't move the needle one way or the other, trades that worked out terribly, free agent signings that were good, meh, and bad, guys that he let walk that was the right decision, guys that were the wrong decision to walk, and then picks that were good or international signings that were good, and then too soon to say. So things that, you know, we don't really know, we don't have enough data on yet. I wanted to kind of get your impression generally about, you know, Heim's tenure, whether or not you agreed with the piece, and then whether or not you thought that I misbucketed any of these players, because, you know, it was kind of a tough task to look at all of these guys and try and decide where they should go.
Yeah, I think you did a really good job with these buckets. The only one that I really had kind of like an air quotes issue with is Adam Ottavino being a let walk wrong decision. I know he's having a good year this year, but given what he did the year before joining the Red Sox and what he did with the Red Sox, I don't think that was a bad decision. especially because they just replaced him with somebody who was, I mean, the exact same profile of reliever.
Yeah, Jake Diekman.
Yeah, just the opposite hand.
Right.
So I thought letting him walk was fine. It was, you know, you were going to, he's wildly inconsistent and just walked too many. For whatever reason, this year he's figured out how to cut his walk rate by like over 50%. And so obviously that's had a tremendous effect on his overall line. That is incredibly hard for a reliever to do. Have that kind of drastic decline in a walk rate from year over year. So I don't think you could have banked on that happening or even predicted that would have happened with the Red Sox. So I was fine with him walking. I would have preferred him be replaced with somebody else who could do the job better. But I was fine with letting him walk. But that was really the only one.
I was pretty convinced that you were going to say moving Michael Wacha from free agent signings that were fine into ones that worked very well. So you surprised me a little bit, Keaton.
Well, I get where you're coming from. I mean, he did get hurt, so you have to factor it. He did miss time.
Right.
And I understand still the feeling, the regression coming with the peripheral, so I get it.
Yeah. That's kind of, I was playing it a little bit conservative with the Wacha signing, but anyhow, I mean, did you kind of agree about Bloom's tenure with the piece, you know, kind of thinking that things were a little bit more uncertain with Bloom at the helm than they've been in the past? Or, you know, how did you think about the sort of fairness that I looked at Bloom with?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I also agree that Bloom or whoever came into this was basically had the instruction of you got to trade Mookie and you have to get under the luxury tax, which is, in my opinion, is a stupid thing to do for a team like the Red Sox. But I also think that the directive from ownership is basically like get under and stay under no matter what. And I know that they are now back above it, but I think one thing this ownership has been is reactionary. And I would have liked to have seen them be more reactionary 6 months ago or 8 months ago in this past offseason versus now. But I think with the success of the 2021 season, they felt that they could do it again and just thread the needle. And there was just so many things that went right with that season that shouldn't have been banked on happening again. And there was so little room for error and everything went right. And then we're not even seeing like the overcompensation of things that went like way too right going way too wrong this season. We're just seeing like literally this that kind of it split and kind of there's still things going right that we probably didn't expect, and there's things that are going wrong that we did expect. So it's kind of just they should have done more in the offseason. Like we said, there were obvious holes that need to be filled. They thought they could thread the needle again, but they should have taken a team. Like, you can adjust your expectations or adjust your actions based off of like different results. I think they didn't think they were going to compete in 2021, so they were looking kind of further down the road. And then all of a sudden they did. And then they're like, well, maybe we can do it again. Rather than, hey, let's jump on this opportunity, make some splashes in free agency, really build this up and take a run at it. And they thought they could do it again. We all had really high expectations that that was going to happen because that's what the Red Sox do when they're in those situations. They didn't. They had a really lackluster offseason, which followed kind of a lackluster trade deadline, which again in 2021 we're like, oh my god, they can do it, they should be making some moves here. And then they didn't. It seemed like they needed to make a few more moves and ultimately fell short of the World Series. Then came the offseason, needed to kind of shore that up, didn't make the moves that they needed to. They've just kind of been treading water this year, coming up to this trade deadline not knowing which direction they were going to go, and then themselves not really making a taking a stake in a direction going one way or another and kind of adding to more of the confusion, I think just kind of made it worse. But them feeling like they can compete and like just saying that they can compete, but then not really putting a whole lot of effort into it. And then they actually do go over the luxury tax with these moves. It was just like, there had to be a better way to do that. Like, if you're going to go back over the luxury tax, there had to be better players to do that for. There just had to. It seemed like it was like last minute reactionary, let's just do it for the sake of doing it, which is like, I mean, at that point, don't. So yeah, that just kind of adds to all of the confusion and the uncertainty. But I also think that you know, we also see still see the potential in this team going forward. And I think at the end of the article, you make the biggest point that Devers and Bogarts are kind of the two key points to this whole team, and we see the core offensively that this team has and the potential that it has, but that's with those guys.
Yeah.
And so that starts to fall apart when they're not there. And the potential that this team has in 2023 going forward is with Devers and Bogarts on the team. Unless they have some sort of backup plan, which given history doesn't seem like they do, that's going to start to fall apart and make everything look significantly worse. It doesn't seem like they have much of a plan. And, if they don't, if, like, Devers and Bogarts has to be their plan, and then they can add to that. If that's not their plan, it doesn't seem like they have a plan B. It kind of adds to kind of that cloudiness. But there's a bunch of money that's going to come off the books in this offseason. So they should be able to retain Bogarts at the very least. If they don't feel like they can extend Devers now. But then also add to the holes, quite obvious holes that they had, to shore that up and then push this team forward for 2023 and beyond. So I was really looking forward to, I mean, you also did a good point of outlining like COVID obviously factored into this. There was the lockout.
Yeah.
This is the first offseason Bloom is going to have that is going to be air quotes normal.
Yeah.
So let's see what he can do in a normal offseason, but it really feels like this is the leash. If nothing happens here, this is the end of the line.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. This is the defining offseason, and you know, we kind of wanted last season to be the defining offseason, but there are enough built-in excuses as to why it wasn't. This is definitely the definitive one.
Bogarts and then not making the team better, like definitively better, and losing Bogarts would be enough to be like, okay, we're not going in the right direction with
Bogarts. Right. So hopefully, you know, we don't go down that road. But if you haven't checked out the piece, you know, it's still on the site. So go ahead and give that a little read. Keaton, we didn't get any listener questions today. So I guess, you know, people are taking a day off from thinking about the Sox, which is totally their right. So, you know, I don't blame people. I hope there are some people currently out there enjoying the series finale of Better Call Saul. Right now, just a fantastic show. Are you a Better Call Saul watcher, Keaton?
I watched the first, I think, two or so seasons, and I really liked it. And then I just kind of lost track of it once I cut the cord. And then I need to go back.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to be a binge. It was close enough to the end where I was like, I should just let it finish and then binge it.
Yeah, I know your co-host on your other show there, Bailey, is a huge fan of that show as well. I think I like it even better than Breaking Bad. So, you know, fantastic show. I'm very excited to watch the finale of that sometime today or today for you guys. But yeah, that's our show today. We do appreciate you tuning in to listen to some baseball talk with us. We always appreciate that. And if you could, you know, log on and to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your show and give us a rate and review. We would really appreciate that as well. You know, 5-star reviews really help us out. And tune in to the other shows on our network. Keaton and Bailey have the Precap podcast, which I've referenced here a couple of times. Bob Osgood and Shelley Verstrait also have the Red Sox on Deck podcast. You can follow Keaton on Twitter at The Spoken Keats. You can follow me at Dev Jake. And you can follow the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Thanks so much. We really appreciate you being with us, and we'll be with you again next week.